each knife maker have his own recipe. So, you know, when you cook, everybody cook with the same ingredient. We have exactly the same ingredient on the table. The difference is what kind of ingredient you chose and how many of this ingredient you're going to put on that.
Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, your weekly dose of knife news and information about knives and knife collecting. Here's your hosts, Jim Person and Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco.
Hello, Knife Junkie, and welcome to episode number 130 of the Knife Junkie Podcast. I'm Jim Person.
And I'm Bob DeMarco. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast. As you know, the place for knife newbies like myself and knife junkies like you to learn more about knives and knife collecting. And our Sunday interview show is where we get to hear from the knife designers, the makers, the manufacturers, the reviewers, anyone in the knife industry, anyone who loves knives. That's what we're all about here on the Knife Junkie Podcast. And Bob, another great interview. Sundays never seem to disappoint. Who are you chatting with today?
Bastian Coves of Bastinelli Creations. I've been following him on Instagram for years and just been a fan of his beautifully elegant and sort of wickedly designed tactical knives for a long time. And there are some intersections with his interests and my interests that just have always captured me. So Bastian Coves, Bastinelli Creations, I carry one of his diagnostic two-finger karambits on me on a pretty much daily basis. And it's a great little thing. And actually, my wife carries one when she runs and makes her feel safe and secure. Bastian Coves, he's an artist for sure. So it was great talking to him.
All right, we're getting into that interview next. But first, want to remind you that if you want to save on gas, we would appreciate it if you got the Get Upside app. Our show is sponsored in part by the Get Upside app. You can get gas back on your cash back on your gas purchases. Just install the app on your smartphone whenever you need gas. Just search your area, look for savings, claim your discount, fill up the tank. It's really simple. Just take a picture of the receipt with your smartphone. You've earned cash back just like that, quick and easy. So go to thenifejunkie.com/saveongas, thenifejunkie.com/saveongas, and start saving money today.
Ever start looking for your next knife purchase before your last purchase has even arrived? Then you're probably a knife junkie.
I'm here with Bastian Coves of Bastinelli Creations. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the invitation.
It's a pleasure. As we were just talking before we started rolling, I'm a big fan of your work, especially due to the kind of tactical nature of the knives you make. But they also happen to be elegant, beautifully designed, and great for EDC and just regular everyday walking around kind of stuff. So I'm really excited to have you on the show. I've been following you on Instagram for a long time. I have a couple of your knives. I have a good friend who has a bunch of your knives. And anyway, welcome to the show, sir. So how did you get into knives? I was reading on your website. You've been into them for since you were 7 years old, and I can tell from looking at you, you're a bit older than that. How did you get into knives, and you know, what was the impetus to keep you going?
You know, the connection between kids and knife is like always like very, very, very intentional moment, like a big, big, big important moment since the beginning. I was a huge fan of knife, and after a big collection, when like it was like 12 years ago, I decided to make my own blade on my side, and I say, why not? I can probably make something on my side and try, you know. And the day when I decided to make the my first blade, the sensation I have in my hand, the sensation I have when I build the blade was unique. So at this time, I decided to say, okay, why not? You know, why not to change my life and do this kind of stuff? Yes, but the love I have for the knife is like, yeah, since the beginning, I think is like crazy. You know, I'm a knife addict.
Yeah, well, we talk a lot to knife addicts here on the Knife Junkie Podcast, as you might guess from the name. And it's funny, like for me, it's the same thing. Came from an early age. Don't know where it came from. I can probably piece it together. I make a story, but they are definitely a part of my life and a part of my aesthetic. So you were saying that you had a big collection, and yeah, you decided one day, instead of just buying other people's knives, I'm going to make your own. Before I ask you about your first knife, tell me about your collection that led up to that.
Oh, I think the first big brand I was fan since a while was Spyderco, because my father was a policeman in France and carried Spyderco. during a long time. And step by step, you know, every time when you check some stuff in the, because when I was a little bit younger, you know, you don't have any kind of social media too much. The market was really in the shop. You know, you have to, right. to go inside the shop, check some stuff in your hand. And sometimes some good review was in internet, but not too much at this time, you know. And so Spyderco, Benchmade, Ontario, because I was a big fan of some kind of survival blade and stuff like this. Microtech, for sure. Microtech, very long story. In love with Microtech and different kind of lots of American brand. If I have to be honest with you, like Gerber, because Gerber was not too much expensive. Mm-hmm. And some Kershaw. I think I have like probably 70 or 80% of all my collection of knife since I'm seven, I think, something like that, is more American brown than mm-hmm. European or something like that, you know. So yes, big collection of industrial blade, more than custom blade, mm-hmm. because it was easy access for me. Yeah. And I love the idea about some industrial process and stuff like this. And I have a small part of my collection is like full custom from different people in this industry. So that is another part of the feeling, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's understandable. You have a big collection. You're going to veer towards the production knives, especially if you can get designers' knives, you know, designs that you love from designers that you love, but coming down to you through more inexpensive means like CRKT or ZT or something like that, that allows you to have the designs of someone like yourself. Or, you know, Fox Knives. I don't have to get a custom Bastinelli to get one of your knives. So, and you mentioned Microtech before. We're going to get to that later because, oh my God, what you're doing with Microtech is so cool. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that later. That's one of the knives on the long list of knives that I have to get from you. But before we move to your knives, the collection that you had, were they more tactical oriented?
Yes, I have some like traditional blade, you know, from different culture and stuff like this. But it's true, lots of my collection is more like tactical military stuff, you know, this kind of dark blade, generally like PVD or gray coating with micarta or paracord or G10 with toxification 3D effect on the blade. This kind of identity, like when you look the blade like this, you say, oh, this blade is for military, is to go somewhere in the jungle, you know, and it's not to make a toast or to make something like that. Generally, I have more like a tactical, you know, more like a really, really tactical identity. That is the blade I bought a lot. Some kind of little bit smaller tool to carry like they say, like civilian. In the streets, because, you know, generally when we talk about the tactical, generally we have some big size of blade, something not really discreet. The main change since few years now, some tactical blades that are a little bit shorter, a little bit smaller, and keep the same kind of identity, because people they have some evolution on the people how to carry blade and how use blade. But yes, it's true. Tactical is like some feeling, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean for me. And I know you've done some Corsican knife fighting, which I'm going to ask you about. But for me, you know, as a kid, it starts out with the fascination with the weapon side of it, with the outdoor self-reliant side of it. And then as you age, you might need something more practical to carry around with you, but you never lose
that. We dream.
That's how you roll your eyes.
We dream a lot. Since we are kids, we dream a lot and we continue to dream about something. You know, when I was a kid, I dream about some movie. I dream about some character and so on the movie, like Rambo and all these kind of very famous people.
Yeah.
I can watch some action movie and I say, I need this knife. You know, everybody dream on this industry. So it's for that. I think we love the idea to have something like from this kind of action movie and some good memories, you know, to give you the feeling you are part of that.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because when I was 12, I was Arnold Schwarzenegger. When I was 15, I was Sylvester Stallone. And now I'm John Wick. Now that I'm almost 50, I'm John Wick.
I have this period of Steven Seagal a little bit on my side, you know. Yes, you know, but yeah.
So what's it like? Okay, you're in America, you're in Florida right now, but you come from France. What's the knife environment like in France?
The stuff you have to know in France, everything is forbidden. You can carry blade. The funny part, they have not too much restriction about the blade you can buy. Mm-hmm. So you can buy Balisong, Push Dagger, OTF blade, automatic, all the crazy blade in the market you can buy in France like really easy. But you can't carry any blade. Fixed blade folder, friction folder, and stuff like this are completely forbidden in the street, so impossible for you. So it's like more for the collection. You know, in France we lost this mentality to carry weapons, to carry tool like this, because now knife is not a tool. Knife is a weapon for some French mentality. So we are lucky because the knife community is big in France and lots of people don't respect really the rules and like the idea to carry something, you know, and we continue to do that. And that is pretty cool. But it's true. And our mentality and the law in France are really bad about knives. So nothing compared with the United States.
You know, okay. So the United States does have some stymieing laws and stuff like that. But yeah, we are allowed to carry them around. It's a little ironic that in France, you know, one of the homes of classical fencing and sword fighting, that you can no longer carry a knife at all, not even a folder or a friction folder.
Yeah, it's horrible. We like I tell you, we keep some culture about this. They have lots of really good school about Eskrima. They have the community about knife is like huge in France, and so that is pretty cool for us. But for the rest, the law are really bad. The government are really bad for that.
And is it hard for? So I know a couple of French knife makers. I don't know them personally, but David Lespec, for instance. He's someone that I follow, whose work I think is beautiful. Does he have problems selling that beautiful work in France?
The real law in France, it's you can build your blade, but you need a specific certificate or like diploma. I think you say that like this, to sell your blade. So 99% of all the knife industry, knife maker in France who make blade are a little bit outlaw. So we love that, you know, since the beginning. That don't make any sense to be able to build something and not able to sell it. So we continue to make knife show. We continue to make publicity and stuff, and nobody knock on the door for the moment. So it's okay.
That's cool. They usually don't knock. I think most listeners probably know about your knives, but if they don't, I will describe them right here as I see them. You have all of the designs are, I would say, tactical first, but almost all have very practical applications. You could carry these all and just use them day to day. You don't need to be getting into knife fights with them, but they have such a beautiful look and a very tactical look. And I know just from reading your bio on your webpage that you've done, and from watching you test your knives in your studio, you definitely have some knife training. And I was trying to, is this Kali? What is he doing? But then reading, you know, some Corsican style of knife fighting. Tell me about that.
It was really important for me. I practiced some Eskrima before I started to make blade. But that for me, that makes sense to practice something around the Eskrima if I made some like some blade to protect yourself. It's like build some car but without driving license. That doesn't make any sense. So it's for that I decided to learn a little bit more about this, and I learned that with different teacher in France. I have a chance to learn some stuff about some American teacher here who practice Kali, FCS Kali. All the Eskrima I practice is a mix between Indonesian, Filipino, Spanish Eskrima, French Eskrima too, because I have a chance to be a student of Fred Perrin concept. You know Fred Perrin? So Fred Perrin, the huge skills, and he's a really good teacher, and his inspiration is a mix between lots of different kind of Eskrima from different land, and that is pretty good. I have a chance to design different kind of blade for really good martial artists too, so it's for that I have time to learn to learn some stuff with them. So yes, it's a mix between different identity. I'm still a student, you know, no big head. I'm not a teacher. I just like to share sometimes my all the stuff I learned in the past, and I continue to learn. Because like you say, I make blade, but I love to use and test my blade too. So just to understand, because we need to understand the ergonomy. To make a nice design is not enough for what I love to do. You know, we need to understand what's going on in your hand when you take the blade, when you move like this, if the blade's twisting your hand, if you imagine your blade gonna stab really well, gonna go inside the target, and because the geometry of the blade is completely weird, that don't go inside very well, so you have to change something. Just to understand what's going on, and that helps a little bit for sure to know how to move, how to play. And is always interesting because they have a huge evolution about Eskrima in this industry. Every day they have something new to learn. So it's really funny.
You talk about Fred Perrin. I think he is so cool. I love his knives, and I like watching him talk. He reminds me of Klaus Kinski, the actor, just a younger version of him. But Fred Perrin, in his designs, he's got this very interesting thing where, and I think he borrows this from traditional French knives, but instead of putting a guard on the knife, he makes the blade wide and the handle narrow so that the blade itself acts as a guard and a thrust. And I see some of those pointers in your knives. What kind of design influence have you gotten from Fred Perrin?
I think, if I have to be honest with you, Fred was my huge influencer, like for all the beginning, since the beginning. I'm going to come back on Fred Perrin, but just to let you know, my process when I work on some blade, you know, you work with your memories, you make your design with what you need, you make a design with what you want to draw, what you want to create, but you take a picture with your hand. Every time when you take something in your hand, your body take a picture, you know, you keep something in your mind, some sensation. And it's the same for your eyes. Imagine all the show I made since 12 years. I take a picture with my eyes on all each table. You know what I mean? So too much files. It's the same for everybody, you know? So the about Fred, I'm a huge fan of Fred Perrin since a while. And I have a couple of his knife. And the ergonomy, the dynamic of his blade was like a big inspiration, and not only, you know, the influence and the speech he had. All the character around Fred Perrin was a big inspiration for me. After like 30 years, they don't have too much knife maker who can tell you the same story after 30 years. Fred Perrin saw lots of knife makers started on this industry and crashed completely. This guy stay on the same line, you know what I mean? He stay here. Everybody is a legend now, so he's really proud to be one of his friends. But Fred was a big inspiration of me for my few fixed blade I made, you know, with the red fixed blade, you know, the first finger like this. Mm-hmm. I changed the ergonomy on the back because in my hand the ergonomy will be a little bit different for me, you know what I mean? And that is a big Drago. And yeah, the big Drago is really funny because it's perfect because you talk about this. The big Drago was my first one cleave blade. And when I make this blade, like a big one, I asked to Fred, I say, hey, bro, this blade, when I finish this blade, it look like really close to your PPT, the one you designed for Spyderco, you know? And I say, please give me your advice. Give me what you think about this. I don't want to make a copy. And he tell me, he say, no. We saw clearly your identity on this blade. It's not a big deal for me. You can do that. But I still continue to say, yes, clearly, Bastian, they have some DNA from Fred somewhere. You know what I mean? It's like clear.
Well, I would say, I mean, I'm looking at it from the point of view of someone just holding a knife. I see that you don't use a guard and that you use the wider blade, the thinner handle, and the finger twill. But it doesn't look like your knives don't look like Fred Perrin knives. And for everyone listening, I just held up a big Drago Tack, which is an awesome Warncliffe knife that Bastien designs and has produced. And to me, it actually does not look like the Fred Perrin PPT. You're talking about the Spyderco model. To me, it doesn't look like, because I mean, vaguely, it's a Warncliffe, but that's about it. Like the handle is different. The whole vibe is a little bit different.
That is a goal. You know, you can talk about inspiration. I like the idea to talk about inspiration because you have no bad stuff to think about inspiration. Mm-hmm. I try to find a balance every time. to find my good. I love, if I can use that, I love to use like the name of recipe. Each knife maker have his own recipe. So, you know, when you cook, everybody cook with the same ingredient. We have exactly the same ingredient on the table. The difference is what kind of ingredient you chose and how many of these ingredients you're going to put on that. And I like the idea since 12 years to think about, I have my own recipe and I try to keep the same DNA. Sometimes my blade can test a little bit close. The test can be close to the other one already made in the market by a good friend of me, but it's different. You know, I try to find this balance. And it's for that some people, when some people tell me all the design was already made and stuff like this, I'm not really agree with that. You know, they still have some good recipe to do with some new kind of material, new kind of a mix between angle, balance. You know, everybody can find some new identity. Identity is really important. So Fred was a good inspiration, and I was really lucky last year to have my first real collaboration with him, because on my RP, I use this concept, you know, with the ring.
Oh, yes.
The La Griffe, you know, the claw.
So you came out with a knife that was last year called the Harpy. And it's got that, if people remember, there was a, what was it called? I don't remember what was it, but there was a Fred Perrin knife that Cold Steel made for a short while that had that, also had that. Yes.
Emerson blade made
the La Griffe. Yeah. So you have that finger. So your Harpy is kind of like that, but it also has a down sloping, almost karambit-ish blade. And man, that thing looks nasty. Actually, you posted I believe you posted a picture of some sort of special operator that had one on his tactical vest on Instagram. That was cool to see. So you were talking about your process and I brought up Fred Perrin because he's a tactical French knife maker, but really, like, I don't see your work as derivative from him. I see your work as always kind of an outcropping of older stuff you've done. You've made, I don't know, 20 or 30 designs now already, and many of them have gone into production, and they all share your same design language, but they all look different from one another and totally different from anyone else's work. What is your process for designing these things? Do it on CAD? Do you draw? Like, what's your, how do you?
Yeah, a lot. I draw a lot. I have plenty of book. Few of my ideas are directly in the book. Some ideas are good, some ideas are bad. So nobody gonna see this kind of stuff. But for the rest, yes. When I feel something good, when I feel a good dynamic on some drawing, I make a test in my shop. So generally, I take some piece of steel. I started to make the custom, and for each process, you know, every time is the same stuff. You can draw that look like good, that look like cool. You make the 3D in your hand and say, oh, no, like it's better on the drawings than in my hand. So you change some stuff and sometimes everything match, each step match. So at the end, when you have something like really good, who match perfectly with what you want, what you need, and you make a test and all is on the same vibe, generally, for that, generally, the process go on the full custom and after on the full industrial production. But so my process every time is identity, because the big challenge I have since the beginning was to find my own identity, because this industry is huge between the knife company, the big knife company, the knife makers, the knife smiths from different parts of the world. Just to be sure if somebody put 100 blade on the table without any logo, you can find mine like in few seconds. That was my, it's probably stupid for some people, but that was my challenge since the beginning. And we try to keep this identity a little bit.
Well, that's the talk of an artist. An artist is always searching for a style, something recognizable, something that is their own. And that becomes a unique language for expressing themselves. And you've translated that into knives. When you, after you do these drawings, and now you're going to make, say, a prototype in your shop or maybe a custom in your shop, what do? Do you send steel to the water jet cutter and get blanks back and start working, or?
Oh, no. We use water jets just for full custom, only for one pieces since 2 months. We started to do that 2 months ago with a company in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. For the one blade, the name is Arrowtack, because it's a very symmetrical small dagger we made. And because to make symmetrical dagger, like when you want to make 20 pieces, it can be a big challenge, because if you eat a little bit more one side, you have to eat a little the other side, and at the end, the design is
done. Suddenly, you have an ice pick.
Yeah, exactly. So only for this one, but now since the beginning, the only tool we use, and when it's full on made, we order just the piece of steel, and I make my drawing with my Sharpie. I use my bandsaw. And after I use my belt, like 80 grind on the belt, on the grinder, and I make my design like this, and I manage everything with the grinder and the bandsaw and some tool by hand. That is all the process. When I say full custom, it is really full custom. No like modern machine on it.
That's interesting, because a lot of people, there's this divide I'm sure you're aware of in the knife world. Maybe it's not a divide, but it's a divide of opinion. Some people feel like a custom knife has to be the way you're doing it, taking the sheet, drawing it out with Sharpie, cutting it out with your bandsaw, taking that 80 grit belt, shaping it, and then taking it all the way down to a finished level. And then other people will have a whole bunch of blanks cut out and water jet, and you know, have some of the more monotonous stuff taken care of. And actually, I don't have much of an opinion either way. I feel that if I were a custom knife maker and I had a lot of knives, I would water jet, and if I didn't, or maybe if I had a certain process already dialed in, I would take it from scratch. To me, the scratch way seems like the best bet. But like you said, there are some things that are challenging, like a perfect symmetry.
Yeah, it's very complicated speech. But if I have to be honest with you, to give you what I think about this, everything is about hertz. You know, it's about all the energy you put on it. If you have like 10 steps made outside and you make the rest by your hand, you can put that custom if you want, because if you put lots of energy on it, if you make 10 blades like this and these 10 blades are completely different, it's okay. You know, they have no, but I understand if you are a nice miss, you are the guy who put the steel on the forge, work like during a few hours on the PC, you make everything like full and made. And close to you on another table, you have another guy who put two screw and make one sharp and put the name like full custom on the blade. I understand you can be sad, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's true, the job is completely different. But I know some people who make this process and use some modern machine for some like quick process too. And for me, it's still like really impressive custom, because I saw some people who do that because they spend lots of time on other process too. You know, some guy who grind like crazy and make some perfect polish, very clean, symmetrical. They make some incredible handle and everything is about hurt and energy you put on it. That is the name of custom. To screw is not custom, you know what I mean? But for the rest, I don't care if it's water jet or something like that. Everything is about hurt and the energy you made on it.
The heart and the energy. Yeah. Some people, knife nuts who've been collecting for a long time start to recognize the spirit in the knives, if you will. And I don't have too many custom knives. Well, I have two. I have two custom knives, but a large collection of production knives. And a lot of that is based on design. Whose designs do I like? Who's producing them the best? And there's a level way up here is a custom knife. This is imbued with the most spirit of the artist, the most heart of the artist. And then as you go down to production, naturally there's less and less, but as a consumer who can't afford lots and lots of custom knives, I feel like if there's a company like Fox, for instance, who can offer the designs of someone I really admire, like you, for instance, that gives that production knife more soul, you know, than just some anonymous production run-of-the-mill kind of thing. Does that sound crazy?
I understand that. I respect that. You know, everybody is different. You know, some people like the idea to know one knife maker spend 2 days or 3 days or 1 week on one knife and deliver me this blade, and this blade is unique, is for me. And some people love this sensation, love the idea to have something unique. Some people don't care completely about where from the blade, who made it. They want just a really good blade and that's it, you know, that's just an identity and that's it. So I respect all this both side and everybody is different, because everybody is different. This market, this industrial market, is here for some identity, And the custom market, the full custom market is here for another kind of identity too. So it's for that the Blade Show is a, all Blade Show, all Knife Show are incredible for that, because if you don't find something good in the table in your left, check on your right, probably you have something good for you, you know, that is great.
Right. Right. So collaborations, you've done a lot of collaborations and a number of them with some serious heroes of mine, like Fred Mastro and Doug Marcaida. What's it like working with, well, non-knife makers, but people who are knife aficionados, users, experts? What's it like taking their design input?
You know, my example was Dougmarcaida, because Dougmarcaida was probably my first huge, big collaboration. You know?
I'm sorry, you said who? Dougmarcaida?
Dougmarcaida.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Dougmarcaida was my first huge collaboration because he was a very famous martial artist before to be a very famous judge on History Channel, you know, on Forged Fire. When some people like this come to you and say, yes, you know, I want something like that. I have some idea about this. They give you some idea, you know, do come for the first time, just with a old picture of broken scissor, just a whole picture of broken scissor. The scissor was ugly, nothing crazy, but he sent me that. He say, what you think about this, what you can do with that. And he gave me like a few days. And after a few days, I designed the picker. I made my own interpretation about the broken scissors, his ID. And it's for that, it's really funny when you think about this. He can see 10 different knife maker and send them the same picture and say, what you can do with that? Probably you can have 10 different design, because it's my own interpretation about this. This design is my design. But it's my design for Dougmarcaida. This design was not possible without Doug, because he come to me and asking me about this. And this connection was like really good, because, you know, it's weird to imagine some people have some idea, and you, every time when you send some drawings, the people say, no, I don't like that. No, I don't want that. So no.
So let me just tell listeners, if they don't know what the Picura looks like, it's like a straight karambit with a little scalpel blade at the end. It is a nasty little thing, and you can hide it in all sorts of places, but it's a full hand grip. Unlike the diagnostic, which is a little two-finger karambit that I am absolutely in love with. And I sent you a picture today. It rides on the back of my work ID, this ID. I am a tagged human. I have to carry this around my office, but at least I get to hide a little cute little karambit behind it. And I say cute, but this thing is nasty. It's chisel ground. It's small, curvy D2, and it's like a little claw. And mostly I use it for opening boxes or letters. Every once in a while I have to vanquish a foe or fight off a horde, but pretty much it's just for opening envelopes. So when you go to design a knife for, Fred Mastro, another martial artist that you collaborated with. Now the PY, our good friend Ian that we were talking about before, has a PY and the trainer, and I have had a chance to use it. It's a very different knife than the Picura, the first collaboration.
Different identity.
Different identity. So Doug Marcaida came to you with a pair of broken scissors. What did Fred Mastro say to you when he said, I want a knife from you?
You know, I'm the PY was already a design I made in the past, and I don't make too much. I was like, I made like probably two or three PY, but a short one. And when I crossed Fred Mastro at the SHOT Show, I show him this blade and he say, you know, I love this blade. The only stuff I would like this blade a little bit longer, you know, for the handle. And I would like the blade a little bit longer like this, but same profile, same kind of stuff. So I come back to my shop. I decided to change a little bit some detail like he asked him. I make a prototype and he feel perfectly in his hand. So the story started like this. Fred have different kind of skills too, like impressive skills, different background than different history and background than Dougmarcaida. So it's all that the blade is different. All the collaboration I made, every time it's just the beginning of something new, and it's not possible. I don't want to make 10 collaboration and make 10 exactly the same blade. You know, that don't make any sense. It's going to be stupid. So I'm lucky for the moment. Each people I met asking me to work with them, asking me completely different kind of design. So it's really cool. And I have plenty of ideas. So, yeah.
Yeah, plenty of ideas. You can tell from looking at your website. you also did a collaboration with Jared Wihangi. He's from Brazil, I believe, right?
He's not from Brazil. Step family is from Brazil. His wife from Brazil, but he's a police officer in Utah.
Okay,
Yeah.
He's a very big. He does a lot of training. Police departments and such, and obviously
he's a instructor, yeah,
right. And from watching him on Instagram, he's pretty incredible. And you recently released a push dagger with him. So why do all of these people come to you, Bastien? I mean, you have three of the top guys in that industry coming to you. What's that about?
I think it's probably because of the connection I have and the identity of my blade. You know, when you see my blade, probably you can read some message inside this blade. And after the people come to me and talk with me, probably and like probably the idea I share with them. And yes, you know, I already met some people and the connection was not like pretty good. And we decided to go on different way. That's happened sometimes, you know. Yes, I'm really happy to work with this kind of people. I have this huge connection since probably the beginning when I started to work with Funker Tactical. Mm-hmm. Funker Tactical was a completely new way for me, you know, with Paulo Simoe, with Paulo Rubio. This team introduced me, make lots of connection for me. And after, you know, that was the beginning of lots of stuff. Paulo, Doug, Fred Mastro, Jared Wihangi, and step by step, different people. And, you know, all the show we made is a good chance for us to meet different people too. So, yeah.
Yeah, Funker Tactical, if you don't know, GN, he's got an amazing channel too. It's like he travels the world looking for the best martial arts ways. He's kind of like training himself over the years, not training himself, seeking out the training of masters all around the world, sort of assimilating that through his media channel. He's an interesting dude, I gotta say. So you recently came out with something with Microtech that I got to say, oh my God, I saw that thing and I was like, blown away. And what it is, people, if you don't know, it's an automatic karambit, the Iconic. And it is, first of all, I mean, it's based on a fixed blade karambit that is quite beautiful and very stylish. And then Mr. Marfioni turned it into an automatic with the button on the other end over by the ring. How shocking and cool. Tell me about the process of working with Microtech and getting that thing done.
So first, I was like a kid, you know, imagine a French knife maker like me and arrive in the United States, and Microtech is like huge, huge company. And I'm a huge fan of Microtech since the beginning. To be probably the first French knife maker to design for them was a big honor for me. And after that, yes, the process was Tony asking me to come in the Microtech company. He showed me the table and he gave me the paper and say, yes, draw me something. I was ready because I do that like every time. So mm-hmm. I say, okay. So I take the pen and I started to draw the Iconic fixed blade first. Mm-hmm. And after that, on the same, because I stay like during 4 days in the Microtech company. Mm-hmm. And the same week, I decided to design the Iconic Auto. It was easy for me to design something. You know, imagine I have a paper. I have just to draw everything I want. I say, I'm going to put the bottom here. You're going to do that.
Figure it out.
Yeah. And with no idea about the complication and about the challenge going to be for Microtech to make this process. And if you check the first drawing exactly the same than the production. I said to Tony, we have to put the bottom just here because it's going to be really close to the finger, really easy access. But I say, yes, the blade is here. The opening system is here. I say, well, it's not my business. It's yours now. And Tony look at me and say, yeah, it's not a big deal. We're going to do that. No way for Microtech team to tell me, you know, it's going to be probably complicated. We will see. No, directly it's not a big deal. We can do that. We already have different idea and they have incredible, incredible team over there. You have no idea.
I kind of do because I have some of their knives, but man, that's cool. So that to them presented no problem. That was probably a fun challenge. Put the button at the other end.
And the stuff you have to know, probably you don't know that, but when some people tell you everything is made in USA over there, is made in USA. The small screw you have like this is made by them. Yeah. No, it's true. It's not like screw from outside. It's not like a handle from other ways. Everything is made by them. You see the laboratory about the full polish blade, full custom blades they made over there. The work is crazy. It's crazy. Incredible team. Incredible team. Like really.
Microtech is a love I found recently. I'd say over the last 3 or 4 years. And I've accumulated only about four at this point. But I have a couple of really nice pieces. And man, I want more. And I really would love that automatic karambit, the iconic, because I know just a tiny bit of karambit, like just enough to make me dangerous to myself. And I feel like that knife would be a real feather in my cap, you know? So in terms of other makers, okay, so we've talked a little bit about Fred Perrin, and we talked about Microtech. Who are the other makers who are making knives that excite you, that inspire you?
I have a good friend of me. His name is Pierre-Henri Monet. He's a French guy, and he make completely different blade. You can imagine he make primitive blade. He make a bones with some like really old school Bowie. Mm. This guy was a big inspiration for me, and he helped me for some step. He helped me to understand some process about convex grind. He was the guy who helped me to love convex grind, because you know all like 90% of my blade is the convex grind, and this process is. Yeah, yeah. All the full custom we made, we make hollow grind, we make chisel grind, but for all the karambits, it's convex. Mm-hmm. So everything is like very thin convex. And I learned that with him.
So what do you find is the benefit from convex?
Because I already test different kind of blade. And when you check the difference for the same geometry, I already make some karambit with a flat ground. Mm-hmm. I make karambit with chisel, and I make karambit with a convex. And every time, the sensation you have in your hand for some cut and different target, okay? It can be like jeans and meats, and it can be a paper, it can be a cardboard, it can be everything, some resistance on the target, on the dummy, you know? Every time you feel in your hands, this kind of, the blade slide directly on it. And the sharp stay like a little bit stronger in some part. When you have some contact with the bones, when you have some contact with some very strong parts, because the sharp, the geometry on the sharp is like a little bit like bumpy, you know, a little bit that not like flat like this. That helps a little bit to keep the sharp strong. So it's I feel in love with this one, and it's a really old school grind, you know.
Yeah.
It's convex is from like really, really, really in the past.
Well, I know that a lot of outdoorsmen like convex grind. It's tough. It's sharp. It gives a little bit more meat behind the edge, but it also slips, you know, you don't have that hard angle at the top of the edge. It just kind of curves around. But at least in the States here, you see a lot of convex grinds with camp knives and big knives and, you know, knives like Bark River and outdoors knives, but so rarely do you see them on tactical knives. And I'm just going to call your knives tactical knives because
it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. It's okay.
So, our buddy Ian came to your shop and he had a red folder, and you said, let me give you a little special edge on that. And you convexed it. And when he showed it to me, I was like, this is highly irregular, a tactical knife with a convex blade. How about that? But oh my God. I mean, I would have to say that the three knives I have of yours, I have the compact and then the big Dragotech. These are just the first ones, mind you, but they are very thin and slicey knives. So they're meant for robust applications, but the blades really, I mean, you could use them just as easily in a kitchen and they would work beautifully.
Yeah, you know, because I think it's because we're from France and in France, all is forbidden. And you know, because all is forbidden, you have to build something thin, light and comfortable. Mm. And the idea to carry something heavy, something like not with a good balance, is not part of our mentality. That don't mean all the blade with a big thickness, something like a big tool, something like that. I know lots of companies like to build this kind of strong, big blade with a big thickness. That don't mean that is bad. It's just not our mentality, our vision about blade. But yes, generally the blade we made, except like two design we made for different people, are generally really thin, very light. And the tactic blade, you talk about tactical blade, the red fixed blade I made for the French SWAT team, you know, the red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Imagine all the heavy equipment they carry all day long. They have like ammo, they have the plate carrier, they have everything. They have like 30 kilos.
Big vests and all the arms ammunition. It's heavy.
Crazy. More than with the helmet and stuff, they are more than 30 kilos on the back. It's crazy. So to build for them some blade, like some heavy blades that don't make any sense. They want something just to go to stab or to cut, to use like a cutting tool, or sometimes if that's happened to use like a weapon, but generally it's more like a tool. Like 97% of all the people I know use a blade like a tool more than a weapon. And it is better like this, you know, but yes, it's something light and comfortable, and we try a little bit elegant, a little bit.
So who's your customer? I mean, I know we talk about the tactical people and they're 3%. And I know I've seen your knives in movies, right?
Yeah.
Haven't I seen the red in Resident Evil or something?
No. You see the Raptor L on Lucy movie with Scarlett Johansson.
Yes. That's what it is.
And
Okay. Besides the movies, which is pretty cool. And besides these tactical operators that are running around with your knives, who are the people who are buying your knives?
So you have, like you say, you have the military and police law enforcement to buy that. And you have all the people who dream to be a military and law enforcement too, you know. And you have the knife addicts, you know, like all the people who love blades. This knife industry in the world, I'm going to talk about knife industry in the world, and knife addiction in the world are huge. And it's just like a test, you know. Everybody loves different kind of blade for different kind of reason. Mm-hmm. And I'm really lucky because my blade is not for everybody. I'm pretty okay with that, and I'm pretty honest with what I do. Some design like very big angle. They have this kind of very specific design. So not too much people like my blade, but it's for that I'm focused about people who love it. So I try to take care of them. And knife addiction, professional in different kind of place. And some dreamer, you know, some people who love some kind of blade.
I think I fit in all of those categories, probably the dreamer and the knife addict the most. But
me too. Don't worry.
So, but you're saying that not too many people love your knives, but I think that's an exposure issue, because to look at your knives, they're very elegant and beautifully designed, and you don't have to be a knife aficionado to recognize that. The small Dragotac or the Dragotac Compact is my, whenever I drive longer than an hour in the car, this is what I carry. Because it's got a glass breaker and I think it's cool. And my wife likes this knife. And to me, that means, oh, we're crossing over. Like, this is a universal knife. So I think that your designs are pretty universal across. And then you have something like social media. You have Instagram to show these things off. How much has Instagram, social media, and that kind of thing, how much has that affected and helped your business, would you say?
I think if I don't make any mistake, I was the first French knife maker who used social media since 12 years like a tool to talk about my blade. At the beginning I'd use YouTube to talk about my collection, and after, when I started to make, like 12 years ago, to make my own blade, I use YouTube to show some stuff, to show how I forge, how I make the blade, and step by step, and it was huge. If I have to be really honest with what I do, it's social media helped me to be more, I don't know if I can use this kind of expression, more on the light than some people who make the job since a while. That don't mean I deserve to be on the light more than some people. So that means only I know how to use some tool to talk about my blade. And social media helped me and help a lot today. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's for that every time when I work on different kind of show, you saw some people with incredible skills. They build some blade. I need probably two life to make this kind of blade like this. You know what I mean? But these people are not too much famous, and because probably they don't know how to use this kind of tool, deserve to be famous more than me. You know what I mean? But in the knife industry, yes, social media help a lot today. You can start it to make knife tomorrow in your garage, and in 1 year you can be like in the show because social media is a big exposure. Everybody, if you have this kind of good balance, how to use a tool, social media is magic for that.
Yeah, it is just another tool, and it's not just a tool for shining the light on yourself and that, but it's also a great way for people to learn about processes. And you go on YouTube University and learn about how to make knives these days. Not that you can substitute the actual experience of doing that with a mentor in an actual shop. But if you don't have that, if you don't have a knife shop or someone you could be with, you can go on YouTube and learn. It is pretty amazing. And with your stuff, with your Instagram channel, I love it. I got to say, your Instagram is always, well, there's always special attention paid to the photography. It always looks good. And occasionally there's some hot babe holding your knife, and I'm like, this makes this knife even better. but I mean,
that
like,
is funny. That is funny you say that, because I just get a little bit, because if you check on my Instagram, generally I between 7 and 10 picture, I share a picture with a model, you know, but between these two models, they have like 7 or 10 picture with my blade on the table, with me, with my gun and something like that.
Right.
And during the show, it was a Los Angeles show like 2 years ago. One lady come and his husband say, he introduced me and something like that. And she say, yes, you know Bastini knife. He say, no, I don't know. She say, you know, the guy who shared the picture with the lady and the model. He say, oh man, I love you. That started to be a little bit our identity. So, you know, it's really funny how people keep in their mind. Mm-hmm. And the impact of you know better than me the impact of women in the brain of some people. So that is like a tattoo. It's like a tattoo in your.
It'll make it stick. What can I say? It's not every and I hadn't thought about this until right now, but it's not every knife design that could pair well with a model. And that sound, I don't know how that sounds, but sometimes, you know, seeing the little picour or the diagnostic on someone's garter belt, it's just like, oh well.
People have to watch 2 times the picture generally, so it's really funny. First they watch the picture, and after they try to find the blade. So thanks to my bro Rob Cano to do this kind of stuff, and other photographer and model followers. Yes, they make incredible job.
So recently, you've put out a couple of knives that have really interested me. That Bowie is pretty cool looking. The Montana, yeah, good name actually. And then the most recent one, it's I can't remember what it's called, but it's got a big fat belly and a recurve, and it looks kind of like a shrunk down Talibong, you know, like a Filipino kind of sword, a knife. What is that? And where are you going? It seems like your fixed blades are getting larger.
With the curve and stuff like this, you talk about the Reaper or something like that.
Oh no, not that. Now he's holding up a tact. Right now, Bastien is holding up a tactical Kama for me. Kama is that Japanese sickle weapon, and that is just ridiculously cool. As is the Separateur. Your take on the
thing? The Filipino inspiration. Yeah.
God, I love that. I love that thing. I must have one of those soon. But no, I'm talking about the one. It's a fixed blade, maybe 7 inches, 6 inches, and it's got a deep belly. But what I'm getting at is, it looks like your knives are trending a little bit larger. Is that happening, or am I just imagining that?
I live in the United States now, and that is probably the problem, you know, because you know, more I make some adaptation where I live. When you live in France, you have to make something smaller, something light. And because you are here and say, yeah, man, you can carry that free, you know, you can big blade on my back, and I'll carry my gun here and get my Bowie here. And some people give you some crazy ideas. So you say, yes, okay, why not? So yeah. I keep my discreet and French touch a little bit, but yes, I love the idea to build, to put my expression a little bit on some bigger pieces.
Yeah.
But I try to keep something like light, because, you know, I'm not a big guy too. You know, generally, if you check generally the big dude, big knife maker, you know, generally have this kind of big blade.
Yeah.
And carry identity. So I'm still a light guy, you know, not, I'm a little bit skinny. So probably for that, my blade still like light, you know.
Yeah. So when you came out with the Separateur, which I think is I'm not exactly sure how it translates into French, but I have a feeling it's like separator, like you're separating things with that blade. Oh my.
Yeah.
So when that came out, I could barely believe my eyes, and my friend Ian, who's been a guest on the show, actually showed it to me, and I had a chance to, you know, do a little bit of twirling with it. And that thing is, my God. I mean, I feel like people should have that, you know. Every house should have one for home protection. You know, maybe every soldier or every third soldier should have one of those on their back ready to go. I really, really, really like that. That's probably the next Bastinelli I'm going to get. So if I had to ask you, as we wind down, if I had to ask you, if you had to pick one of your knife designs and that's your baby, and then the rest of them have to just go away, what is your favorite? I see your eyes widen. I know that's hard to pick, but what is your absolute favorite of your designs?
Depend if you talk about earth, something who gonna touch me, or something I'm gonna take this knife, because this knife gonna be good on different kind of situation for my life, you know.
Okay, this is what we're gonna say I want your favorite knife that is your most personal artistic expression, and then I want the knife, I want you to tell me what knife you would take, or what one of your creations you would take into hell.
In the hell, if I have to be honest with you, probably is gonna be like the red fixed blade. I think the red fixed blade gonna be like the one I'm gonna carry everywhere and take with me, because this size, this ergonomy are good for lots of place. Plus the history about this blade, this connection, my the possibility to design some this blade for some incredible force special unit in France, and all the story around this blade push me on another step on this knife industry. So this blade probably gonna be my blade, but all the blade I made have a specific story, all connection and all collaboration I made a specific story. But this one was made like probably 6 years or 7 years ago now, and was the beginning of lots of stuff. So
it's cool to think of a bunch of badass French special forces guys walking around with this stylish knife. I mean, you know,
I'm lucky, you know, because I have some SWAT team here in the United States work with that too, and some SWAT team contact me and say we want to do some pieces like this for us too. So I make the logo on the SWAT team on that, and really proud, you know, really proud, because you know, in the knife community, and particularly in France, we grew up with an American movie. Mm. So when you have American soldier, American police who come to see you and asking you some blade, you say, wow.
Plus they're saying, Bastien, I trust you with my life. Make me a knife. You're like, okay.
it's good.
That is very cool. Okay. So, tell me, what is the future of Bastinelli Creations? What can we expect from you and your knives in the future?
You know, for us, it's going to be to develop a little bit. I wanted to have more people inside this family, and same way, you know, to continue to have some lots of connection with different kind of people. I have each collaboration I made every time is a good story and good memories. And you know, I'm really lucky to wake up every morning and do what I love to do. So that is what I expect. I hope that's gonna happen again during a few years, because I'm lucky, you know. I know where I am, and I know it's not too much people can do that. Wake up at the morning, go in some office, see exactly the same face every day, and say I'm really happy to come back home. And and so yes, you know, it's I'm lucky. So it's for that. I enjoy this life. I enjoy that. I continue to put lots of energy to share that with all the people who want to share that with me, and. That's it, you know. Take care of this small family company, and that is all the wish, you know.
Right on. Well, Bastien Coves of Bastinelli Knives, Bastinelli Creations, thank you so much for coming on the Knife Junkie podcast. I feel like I have a lot of more things I want to talk to you about, but that'll have to be on a future date.
When you want, I'm ready.
Awesome. I love your work. Thank you for everything you do. And I'm just going to spend a lot of time and money trying to accumulate more. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time, and we stay in touch. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
You're listening to the Knife Junkie podcast. Call the Knife Junkie at 724-466-4487 with your questions or comments.
All right, back on the Knife Junkie podcast, episode number 130. Great interview, Bob, there. Yeah. Bastinelli Creations, Bastinelli Knives.
But he comes up with a new design so frequently. I'm just constantly watching him come up with new things. And like a true artist, he keeps his important work in his repertoire, and he won't stop making that stuff, mm-hmm. but he's always kind of onto a new design. And I love that. And the inspirations from the kind of knives that he takes his inspirations from just make for some really beautiful, elegant, graceful, wicked looking things. And I love them. And they're, incidentally, they're very, very comfortable in hand and useful as regular EDCs. I always stress how kind of menacing they can be, but in reality they're just great tools.
Well, go to his website and you'll see a great menacing looking picture of the logo and everything, where he has links to Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Of course, we'll have all those links in our show notes that you can find at thenifejunkie.com/130. It's going to wrap it up for our interview show today. I encourage you to join us again Wednesday for the midweek supplemental episode of the podcast, and Thursday for Thursday Night Knives on YouTube at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. So for Mr. Knife Junkie himself, Bob DeMarco, I'm the Knife Noob over here, Jim Person, saying thanks for joining us on the Knife Junkie podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Knife Junkie podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review at reviewthepodcast.com. For show notes for today's episode, additional resources, and to listen to past episodes, visit our website, thenifejunkie.com. You can also watch our latest videos on YouTube at thenifejunkie.com/YouTube. Check out some great knife photos on thenifejunkie.com/Instagram. And join our Facebook group at thenifejunkie.com/Facebook. And if you have a question or comment, email them to bob@thenifejunkie.com or call our 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487. And you may hear your comment or question answered on an upcoming episode of the Knife Junkie podcast.